Hi, Lionesses. It is Thursday, and it is Natasha, and I'm super excited because today we're going to be talking about procrastination, and we have with us Dr. Mary Lamia. She is a clinical psychologist and psychoanalyst, as well as a professor at the Wright Institute in Berkeley, and one of her passions is to encourage emotional awareness. She's also an author several times over, so first I just want to say thank you and welcome Dr. Lamia.
Thank you for having me.
So we thought today first that we were going to talk about how to stop procrastinating in business, but then as we started chit-chatting a little bit with Dr. Lamia, she says, oh, no, she thinks procrastination can be to your advantage. And so I'm really, really excited to kind of just dive right in and see what your thoughts are on the topic.
Right, because you don't usually find people who say you don't have to stop procrastinating, but you could just optimize how you do it. You could become a better procrastinator, and that's true. I just got back from a conference in Chicago where a whole lot of procrastination researchers were presenting, including myself, and I'm sure I was the only one who said, it's a valid motivational style, and this is why. And actually, I got a really great reception because of the way in which I conceptualize why people procrastinate. But the basis of this is that I'm not a procrastinator. I never have been a procrastinator. I'm anything but a procrastinator. As a clinical psychologist, I used to think that procrastination was sort of a maladaptive tendency, but given the high-achieving individuals I've worked with in the last 40 years and all the graduate students I've worked with in the past 20 years who are self-identified procrastinators, I've changed the way I see things. I've been very humbled by my inquiry into the subject of motivational styles. So, that's the bottom line. I mean, that's sort of where I'm coming from on this is I used to think this way, and now I think otherwise. And it's mostly from studying high-achieving individuals. You know, there's two basic criteria for success, and that is that people never miss a deadline and their work reflects their best efforts. That's it. Mm. It doesn't matter if you do things ahead of time or if you do them 1 second before the deadline. As long as you never miss a deadline and you do good work, high-achieving people, that's what they do across the board. It's really interesting. So it doesn't matter if you procrastinate or not. But, Natasha, you asked, like, what is procrastination?
Right.
So what I found is that the different task completion timing of successful people who are procrastinators and non-procrastinators has to do with when their emotions are activated and what activates them. So their behavior sort of results from their individual histories, all their emotional memories and scripted emotional responses of when emotions were activated in terms of a task to complete. So procrastinators who consistently complete tasks on time, even if it's at the last minute, are motivated by emotions that are activated when a deadline is imminent. They're deadline-driven, and I call them deadline-driven because it sort of takes away from the stigma of just being a procrastinator. I call them deadline-driven procrastinators as well. But in contrast to procrastinators, people like me, task-driven people, when we're faced with uncompleted tasks, we're compelled to take action right away. We're motivated by our emotions to complete a task ahead of schedule and put it behind us. And at the same time, people who are successful, task-driven people, attend to the quality of their work prior to scratching the task off their list. So we're primarily motivated by emotions that are activated in response to uncompleted tasks, where people who procrastinate are motivated by their emotions that are activated at a deadline. Missing a deadline or failing to do the work adequately is a problem that has little to do with procrastination. It has to do with other emotional issues. But people often blame things on procrastinating when, in fact, other stuff is going around and using the excuse that you missed a deadline because you procrastinated just allows you to save face.
Right. Wow, so that's a lot to digest. That's very interesting, you know, being deadline driven versus being task driven. Where do you think that the stigma comes from in terms of it being something that's negatively looked upon?
A lot of it has come, well, you know, Benjamin Franklin said that early bird gets the worm. I mean, culturally, you know, in our society and culturally, I think we have this legend that doing things ahead of time is an advantage, when in fact, it's not. But and there's this stigma against we shame procrastinators. Some of the procrastination researchers, and I told this to them in my talk at the conference, is that you shouldn't shame people who procrastinate. It's a valid motivational style when people get things done at a deadline. And procrastination researchers have had a habit of calling them things like, and these are words they use, slackers, lazy, task adversive, low conscientiousness. They have poor self-regulation, and that's why they wait until a deadline. And that is not true.
Right.
So emotions are what determine our task completion styles, how emotions are activated. Emotions motivate everything we do. And in fact, our emotional histories lead us to who we have become. You know, even political beliefs, religious practices, you know, those are based on a warehouse of emotional memories that have been linked to an ideology. So that's why people have differences. They have different emotional lives. They have different emotional histories that lead them to become who they are.
What about the procrastinators who miss the deadline? Is there a distinction between those people?
Absolutely. People who miss deadlines or fail to do work adequately, I don't call them procrastinators. There's another emotional issue that's going on that interferes with their getting the work done. But as I said, they use the excuse of procrastinating or delaying or calling themselves procrastinators in order to deal with the shame they feel about repeatedly missing deadlines. You know, when people who, well, I guess maybe one another way to say it is that we think, you know, when we think that people should just get things done because they'll feel proud of themselves, and that people who fail should just do things because they'll feel pride. And thoughts of pride come from emotional sources too. It's like thoughts of future pride instantaneously, but not necessarily consciously, access the internal warehouse of emotional memories we have where joyful pleasure is associated with our efforts and where we previously felt that. People who repeatedly fail have difficulty accessing memories of excitement or joy in response to completing tasks. Instead, their warehouse of emotional memories leads them to anticipate negative emotions associated with defeat. They have a lot of memories of defeat. So when they think about getting something done or doing a project or doing certain work, they don't recall how good they felt, you know, previously when they got something done. They recall being defeated. So when people repeatedly fail, we have to give them the opportunity or the help to have small successes so that their bank of memories holds a lot of success. And success is very addicting because the emotions associated with success make you want more.
Right. That's interesting because it's kind of a reminder that, you know, each day, kind of everything that we experience, it's like if you're putting it in emotional storage.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what happens. We have this emotional storage, every single thing that happens. You know, where people can identify with it the most has to do with relationships. You know, you get into a new relationship and you start having anxiety that it's not going to work out, or this person's not going to like me enough, or this person's going to cheat on me. Whatever happened to you in the past, you think is going to happen to you again, because one of the purposes of our emotional memory bank is to help warn us. So when an emotion is activated, like the excitement of having a new relationship, we might also access all those memories of when it went sour.
Right.
And so then we're warned, and then we have anxiety, and then we think this person is going to be like the last relationship. And so it's important to take a look at what comes up with your emotions in response to a task or another person, and sort of evaluate, does this apply or does it not? Is this based on my emotional history? Or is it the current situation where my emotions are trying to warn me? And, you know, people talk about it in terms of, like, I got triggered by this.
Right.
Well, yeah, you
go right ahead. That's just what I was going to ask you. Are there ways that we can differentiate between, hey, I'm reacting to the current situation rather than I'm scared or reacting to something that has happened to me in the past?
Well, I mean, that's the ideal question. You have to ask yourself every time a lot of emotion comes up in response to something. For example, you have a project to complete and you start feeling as though you're going to fail. Well, do you have a history of failure? If you have a history of failure, your anxiety may be related to thinking you're going to experience that familiar defeat. But if you don't have a history of failure and you're still fearing failure, why are you fearing it? Well, one of the reasons why is because a fear of failure is the cognition we associate with what I call shame anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Anxiety has a lot of different flavors, but shame anxiety is very highly motivating. People will do whatever they can to not be negatively perceived. You know, we brush our teeth in the morning to not be negatively perceived, also to save our teeth. But we don't want to have bad breath either.
Right.
We don't want to be negatively perceived. Anxiety is very, very motivating. So, shame anxiety, that is. So, a fear of failure is associated with that. And so then you look at it and you say, well, I've always succeeded in the past, so I'm just going to get down to work and do it. And this anxiety is trying to motivate me. It's trying to motivate me to avoid shame. That sort of gets me into, do you mind if I say something about negative emotions?
Oh, no, please, go right ahead.
Because negative emotions have gotten this bad rap. We think we're supposed to feel positive emotions all the time.
Right.
But the fact is that we have evolved with a motivational system where some emotions feel positive or rewarding and some feel negative or sort of punishing. And classifying emotions as positive or negative has really nothing to do with their value. But instead, it involves how they motivate us through the way they make us feel. So negative emotions like distress or fear or anger or disgust or shame motivate us to do something to avoid experiencing them, or they kind of urge us to behave in ways that will relieve us of their effects. So, you know, we back off from a dangerous situation based on fear, or, like I said, brush your teeth before a date to avoid possible shame due to bad breath. Essentially, humans are motivated to do something based on their desire to turn on emotions that are positive or to turn off the negative ones. That's a fundamental principle about how we function emotionally.
Right.
So anxiety is one of those misunderstood negative emotions, you know, whether it's gives us attention to the task at hand or a frenzy of activity and completing tasks at a deadline. You know, how many people want to go and medicate their anxiety or get rid of their anxiety all the time?
Right.
Anxiety is interesting because it's actually a blend of two or more emotions. And the blending creates the different ways in which anxiety is experienced. For example, if you have anxiety about a lot of things to get done or little time to do them, you know how you feel that buzz, your anxiety likely involves a coalescence of fear and distress. That makes up anxiety. And generally, you know, distress all by itself is felt as kind of an agitation or annoyance or tension. When we feel distress, the emotion of distress, we're motivated to anticipate what's going to go wrong and try to solve the problem. And this combination also can lead people to experience being stressed out. You know, your brain is just trying to motivate you, but if you see it as so awful or negative or like you got to get rid of it, then you're not using the positive energy you give it or that it gives you. When you have another combination that produces anxiety is when anger combines with fear or distress. That produces agitation. So deadline-driven procrastinators and task-driven people commonly experience agitation or an agitated depression or an angry urgency in the process of getting things done.
Right.
You ever feel excitement with fear, like on a roller coaster ride? You know, when excitement blends with fear, it gives you the kind of anxiety that feels both positive and negative at the same time. We experience it when we see somebody or we anticipate seeing somebody who's a potential romantic interest. You know, you might feel fear and excitement at the same time. That's anxiety, and you call it anxiety, but it's fear and excitement blended together. And we're motivated to do something about it. You know, when deadline-driven procrastinators feel that kind of anxiety, they're pretty highly motivated. They often feel like they're in the zone or they have a lot of nervous energy, but sometimes they direct that nervous energy to the task, and sometimes they may direct it to other things for the time being. Task-driven people often feel it when they complete a whole lot of tasks in a row, and they say, wow, I got so much done, as though they're heroes, and they feel so good. It's so stimulating. Procrastinators always feel that kind of anxiety, almost always feel that sensation under time pressure when they can feel in the zone. Here's one for you. When we have disgust and fear activated together, the kind of anxiety it produces is disgust anxiety, and we become anxious about encountering something disgusting, or we may experience it as a fear of being disgusting. For example, yesterday I felt that kind of anxiety. I was coming off the mountain on a bike ride, and I was all sweaty, and I saw a friend on the trail, and I stopped and talked to her, and I thought, I felt anxious, and I thought, oh, yeah, you know, I'm so sweaty and hot, and I've been riding, and I probably smell bad.
Right, right.
That's anxiety. But
yeah.
Procrastinators often experience a flavor of disgust anxiety when a deadline is coming, and they start to feel anxious, but all their nervous energy gets focused on things like, oh my goodness, my house is so dirty, I got to clean my house, or I got to do the dishes, or they do all kinds of other chores just before they sit down to complete a task.
Right.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Do you ever do your dishes when you had an important project that had to be finished? It's like, at that moment, you decide to do the dishes. You feel disgust anxiety about those dishes.
Yeah. Oh,
procrastinators get all kinds of things done when a deadline is looming and they're about to tackle a project. They're energized and they're motivated they're activated. And so that's a time to get a lot of things done. And they call it, you know, like this frenzy of activity that's wrong, and they beat themselves up for not attending to the project. Instead, they're attending to all this other stuff they haven't done, when in fact, that's just how they operate.
Right.
And it's fine. It's good, actually. But their partners who are task-driven often say, well, why don't you get that thing done before so you could attend to your project now? Or, you know,
they feel guilty.
They make you feel guilty because we task-driven people just don't understand procrastinators. But the biggest motivating force in terms of task completion for both task-driven people and deadline-driven procrastinators is when the form of anxiety, that's the commingling of fear and shame. And shame anxiety, that fear of being negatively perceived and the fear of failure that comes with it, is really, really highly motivating for all people. You know, task-driven people have a fear of forgetting that comes with their shame anxiety. They have to get things done right away because they're afraid they'll forget. I don't know if you've ever met anybody who's task-driven who says, I have to do it right now, otherwise I'll forget.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So, but they really do have a fear of forgetting. Some researchers say that that has to do with differences in working memory between people who are procrastinators and people who do things ahead of time. I'm not sure. Maybe it's both working memory and the emotion that is activated at the moment, but they really do place their anxiety in some context that they're going to forget. They also place it in the context that something bad is going to happen. So they got to get it done now in case they can't do it later, like there's an earthquake or something happens.
Right.
Or they break their leg or forget.
I want to ask you, if I could, quickly, just about the word shame, because it's come up a couple of times as you've been speaking, and I know that you had a forthcoming book, The Upside of Shame.
Yes.
What role does that play in a little bit more in procrastination?
Well, shame is such an intensely felt emotion that people will do anything to avoid it or to relieve themselves of the possibility of experiencing it. So many deadline-driven procrastinators, when they experience the possibility of shame in not getting something done at a deadline, are highly, highly motivated to do it so that they won't have the shame. And it's such a relief. To have a relief of the possibility of experiencing shame feels so good. So highly successful people have a lot of shame anxiety and get things done because they don't want to experience the shame. And guilt is related to that as well. But one of the upsides of shame is that in healthy learning, shame motivates attention to error and a desire to change the self. When we feel shame, we take a look inside ourselves deeply and what we've done wrong or what we might have done wrong or what we're ashamed of, and we pay attention to it. And if people can pay attention to their shame and their error, whatever it is, and muse about it and learn from it and possibly change because of it, shame is the greatest teacher. It's an amazing teacher because it feels so awful. We have to look at it. It's hard to avoid it, although many people avoid their shame. You know, they, instead of taking a look at themselves and saying, oh, I did such a bad job, you know, and instead of taking a look at what they could have done differently and learning from their regrets, they avoid shame, like, they'll go home and have five drinks instead, or they'll withdraw.
Right.
They'll go to bed and pull the covers over their head, or they'll attack somebody. They'll say, it's all their fault that I did a bad job, or they'll attack themselves, like cutting or hurting yourself as a way to defensively respond to shame. So learning from shame is the goal, you know,
right.
And It works. Wow.
So this has just been very, very interesting and exciting because it really changes the way that you can view how you utilize your workday, how you handle your projects, and to, I guess, take some of the pressure and some of the shame off of if you are a person who works last minute.
Right.
I know you
But people who have differences have conflicts with their coworkers,
right,
who do things differently. And I don't know if you recall instances of group projects in elementary school. People who have that deadline-driven style when they're little kids and are in a group project often are reprimanded by their peers who are task-driven and get things done right away. And so imagine you're there's little Natasha and she's in a group,
right,
with Emily and the rest of them who are task-driven, and you do yours at a deadline, they're going to think you're not going to do your part of the project and they're doing all the work. And they're going,
right,
to go to the teacher and say, Natasha's not doing her part of the work and we're doing all the work.
Right.
And you're saying, but wait a minute, I'm going to do the work. You're confident that you're going to do the work. And then you pull it off. You pull off your part at the deadline. They hate you for it because you,
right,
get away with it. And in the meantime, their parents are upset with your parents who didn't teach you to do things ahead of time. All that stuff.
Right.
And the same thing goes on in coworker relationships where people who have projects together, unless they understand that people have different styles, it's really hard. And there's ways around that. For example, managers can set interim deadlines so that every week is a deadline rather than every month or every 6 months at a deadline. And when deadline-driven people have deadlines, they adhere to them.
Great.
There's ways to organize projects so that, say, a task-driven person could write the rough draft. Procrastinators are great at taking rough drafts, perfecting them at a deadline, and making everything right.
Oh, yeah.
So there's ways to organize projects so the procrastinators do their part and deadline-driven people do something else. I mean, task-driven people do something else, the things that get done ahead of time. Or they could do the research for the project and the procrastinator can put it all together at a deadline. So there's ways to use people's skills, and it's like any skills. You know, when there's a construction company, some people are good at doing the electricity and some people do the plumbing and some people build the walls. And why isn't it that we don't organize people in terms of their motivational style as well, because there are differences?
Absolutely. And like you're saying, learning how to cohesively work together without necessarily, you know, shaming one or the other is a brilliant way to kind of pull together a staff.
Procrastinators often say to task-driven people, you know, you've got to relax. I'll get it done. You've got to relax.
Right.
So those words come out of your mouth, Natasha.
That is
you've
so
got to
funny.
Relax. To those people who are pushy, like, you got to get it done now, otherwise you'll forget.
Right. Which is so interesting when they say that, because usually when you say that to a procrastinator, hey, we're busy completing what we were procrastinating on a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
So just because I'm procrastinating on this doesn't mean that I'm doing nothing, you know?
But you haven't missed a deadline. That's
right.
What's important.
See, right.
And so if we evaluate people using the standards of never missing a deadline and your work reflects your best efforts, it washes
right.
away whether somebody does things ahead of time or somebody does it at the last minute.
Absolutely. And I think that is another delineation that you've made today that I've never heard before, because it's true. Procrastinators, you know, you're turning your stuff in on deadline. If you're not turning your stuff in on deadline and it's not done, you have another issue.
Exactly.
You know, that's
a whole other issue, and that's not an issue of procrastination. It's an issue
right.
that people need to take a look at themselves. If people miss deadlines, they need to take a look at themselves and look at the emotional issues that are interfering with their completion of tasks. Procrastinating is waiting. It's not missing a deadline. You know, it's interesting that more recent studies of procrastination at Ivy League schools tend to have the highest percentage of people who are deadline-driven procrastinators.
Oh,
now,
wow.
Those people aren't failing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, why is it, I mean, for some reason, they must be highly, highly effective to have gotten there, and
Great.
They succeed. They're not flunking out. It's a valid motivational style that a lot of people have, but, you know, when I go into a room and if I'm giving a talk and I say, how many people would self-identify as a procrastinator, raise your hand, maybe 20 or 25% will raise their hand. And if I say, well, what if I told you that procrastination is a valid motivational style and highly successful people procrastinate? How many of you would raise your hand as the self-identified procrastinators? And then we get 45%.
Right.
There have been some places, like with graduate students, a lot of them are self-identified procrastinators, but they hide out because they are ashamed.
Right. Wow.
I want all procrastinators come out of the closet and say, it's valid, this is the way I get things done, and we need to understand one another.
So for those of us who, you know, we're launching startups, we're entrepreneurs who are running enterprises, and we're worried about procrastination, if you're not getting things done, what is your recommendation to them?
If you are not getting things done, then it's a matter of taking a look at yourself and figuring out, like, what is the obstacle, really. Now, if you really have a deadline-driven style and you need to optimize it so that you could increase your motivation, let's say, I have a lot of recommendations in the book. There are two chapters devoted to basically optimizing your motivational style. So, but the number one thing is understand the emotions that drive you and recognize the thoughts that arise with your emotions. And make note of when you perform optimally. You know, figure that out. Learning from mistakes is another big one. But if you have a deadline-driven style and you want to just give yourself a little bit of a jump start, one of the things you could do is request a deadline or create one for yourself in circumstances that don't have cutoff points. Or use a to-do list that you resolve to get through by the end of the day. Sort of challenge yourself, put things on a to-do list, and challenge yourself to finish them by the end of the day. Or set a timer to certain intervals, such as 30 minutes, and say, I have to get this done in 30 minutes, and see if you could do it. Narrow the time available to complete a whole lot of tasks, you know, by scheduling a task around other work or activities. Is another thing you can do. Challenge yourself to get something done before you leave the house for an appointment. That's very effective as well, where you create a deadline. Telling another person whose perception of you is important a target date for your project is very helpful. Because that way you makes you accountable and it creates a false deadline. One other thing that people don't generally think about is to never allow themselves anything less than healthy sleep habits. You know, making a commitment to yourself that all deadlines have to take into consideration your sleep schedule is very important. And that's really important for task-driven people, too, because task-driven people think they have to get something done before they go to sleep because if they don't get it done now, it's not going to get done, or they can't sleep if they don't get it done. They can't stand it if their partner or somebody says to them, well, there's this important issue and we'll talk about it tomorrow. Like, they can't deal with that. It has to be done now. And they often sacrifice their sleep.
We all need some sleep.
Sleeping is very, very important
for
a healthy brain. And procrastinators should never think seriously or take seriously any thought of extending a deadline, or because they have fantasies of deadline extension, but highly successful people never extend deadlines. They never get extensions. They really are committed to the deadline. They think about it. They have fantasies, but they don't get extensions. Just like task-driven people have fantasies that something will happen that will take them off the hook. You know,
right. Oh, that's funny.
So those are basically the, you know, some of the important tips I try to give. But, you know, overall, the most important thing is learn to interpret the messages your emotions convey and understand your reactions to them. So in that way, you can make the most of your motivational system. And it motivates, your emotions motivate everything you do. So it's important to know about them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I just think that that's brilliant in terms of what is causing the emotional reaction to, you know, whatever the situation is. And I know before you touched a little bit on the fact that you have a book coming out. You have a book coming out later this month, What Motivates Getting Things Done, Procrastination, Emotions, and Success.
It just came out last week.
Oh, yay! Congratulations.
Yeah, it just came out last
week. Could you tell us a little bit about the book?
Yes, the book is about all about how your emotions motivate you to get things done. And it discusses emotions and what they are and how they're activated. And it's it goes into deadline-driven procrastinators and task-driven people and their various styles. It talks about why you should feel fear failure, why a fear of failure is a good thing. There's a chapter on perfectionism and what it is and how it's also a component of your emotional life. Perfectionism is sort of the cognitive aspect of what gets triggered emotionally in people. And then there's a lot of tips for optimizing your motivational style, you know, whatever it is. There is a chapter on relationships and motivational styles, co-worker relationships and partner relationships. I felt that was really important because so many of the people I interviewed talked about conflicts based on motivational styles.
Wow, a lot of information that you've given us today. Tremendous new ideas, I think, about the role of procrastination in our lives. I don't want the conversation to end there for our members, but we know that we only have a short amount of your time. Where can they go to find more information about you and your book and some of the work that you're doing around procrastination?
They can go to my website. It's marylamia.com, marylamia.com. There's also another website specifically for the book, and it's whatmotivatesgettingthingsdone.com.
whatmotivatesgettingthingsdone.com and marylamia.com, marylamia.com. Ladies, I can also make sure that this afternoon I go inside our private Facebook group and put links to both sites so that you can reach out to Dr. Lamia with any questions, check out some of her books, and some more of her ideas around procrastination. Dr. Lamia, thank you so much for joining us today. We really, really appreciate your time.
Natasha, it's been a privilege to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Your information, again, that you provided is just so interesting. Ladies, we will provide you with more information in the group. You might also be able to find some more information about Dr. Lamia over at lionessmagazine.com. As always, we wish you guys the best in your startups and in your lives as entrepreneurs. And until the next time, rock the day and unleash the lioness within. Thank you.